Hey, welcome back to the Mead House. I am Jeff. I am joined with my buddy Chris. Today's show, Chris, what are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about your first mead kit. How to make your first mead. What the things you need, the things you're going to use, and how important they are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll share a pretty simple recipe of mine we were talking about on the last episode that we can it's real easy to throw together. You can have a pretty successful, pretty easy going recipe. We'll also include that down in the comments or show notes so that you have an easy reference to that. And yeah, let's
Let's jump into it.
real quick. Let's also thank Box of Barleycorn, our listeners, and everybody who is supporting this new endeavor of the Mead House podcast.
I mean, big thanks to Box and Barleycorn. If it wasn't for them, neither one of us would do this. Flat out, we would not. But and thank you for all for joining us. Wherever you are, just give us a shout out on our website or our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Just say hi or have questions. We love all of it.
Absolutely. We are in the process of getting back onto all those different podcast networks like Apple iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all of those. Once we're up there, shoot us a review and give us a little cred, share it with your brew buddies and friends. That's how we get this going further, getting more people listening.
And the more people we have involved in this, the more things we can do for you guys. Let's,
Absolutely.
this is it's tit for tat. We're not doing this. We're doing this because we love it. Let's. We're, this is not our living. This we have a job, but we're doing this because we love it, and we just want more people to love it with us.
And end of the day, this is a conversation between two friends, but this is not in a bubble. You send us what you want to talk about, we'll talk about
Oh
it.
yeah, absolutely.
You
Take your
settle,
suggestions in.
give us things you're interested in. Tell us something interesting you heard about, or hey, have you guys looked at this? I'll probably look at it. We got time. I get bored as heck at work some days, I will devote 10 minutes to go look hunt down the newest trend in home brewing
And I'll
or
be honest, I've got
whatever.
six more books in my mead library in the last 2 weeks because I'm saying, "Oh, here we go."
It's Christmas time. It's time to give gifts, and why not give Chris more to read?
Oh boy, just what I need. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So, for the drink of the day, we're gonna pop this cork. Good.
Ooh, that's a nice one.
That's Invisible Smile from Superstition Meadery. This is a peach mead that I got for my birthday a few months back.
Ooh.
Flavor crest peaches of from Masumoto Family Farm. This is a 12% ABV, and it doesn't say whether it's sweet or dry. I'm assuming it's going to be sweet. If I remember right, a lot of what I've had from Superstition have been on the semi-sweet to sweet side.
Well,
That
happy
is
belated birthday.
no kidding. And thank you, Chris and Leah, for the birthday present, by the way.
First note, the smell is mild. You can smell the peach and you smell the sweet. But it doesn't flood your nose with smell.
Right. Stonefruits can be on the less fragrant side. They're not as punchy.
Yeah. Not bad at all, just it's mild.
And this is definitely at taste, it's a semi-sweet.
Yeah, it is. Not a lot of peach flavor. I mean, it's there.
It's there. Peach is a subdued flavor.
Yeah.
And the trick to making a good peach mead is to add apricot.
That would not have crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Well, this is another interesting thing that we can talk about when we get to honeys, is that you don't think about the components of a fruit flavor or a honey flavor once the sugar part of it has been subtracted from that process. You don't consider the amount of acid that goes into honey. It's there. You just don't taste it because it's so sweet. It is literally concentrated sugar with some acid to it. But once you ferment all that sugar out, what you're left with is some acid bite, some floral components, and things like that. You start to notice the acidity of a honey once it's been fermented dry. In the same way with peaches, peaches actually have a fair bit of acidity, and I'm getting that here.
Yeah, I've definitely got the acidity. So, do they think they used apricot in
I
this?
don't think so. I think this is just a this is a more subdued peach flavor that is not bad. I'm not going to say that that's a negative at all.
No, I'm not complaining about it. Don't get me wrong. I'm
This
just
isn't it's just not a punch you in the face peach. It's kind of a light
I really
evening.
like peach. That's among my favorite fruits, and it's not that. I mean, without that over the really sweet quality, it's a lot more subdued. I'm trying to find a better word than subdued.
It can be very, it's a delicate flavor. And I think this is a nice presentation of just a plain peach as a fruit.
And I'll be absolutely, this one is a little bit dry for me because of the peach acid.
Yes,
flavor.
the acidity does add a level of dryness. There's also definitely some tannin from the peach skins
Yeah.
that I'm getting. Because, like, I don't know if you've you take a sip, you swallow, and then
Across the top of your mouth.
top of your mouth or the front of your teeth, the tip of your tongue,
Yeah.
it almost feels like sandpaper or like it sticks just a little bit. That's an indicator of tannin.
Okay. I could have told you it has a tannin quality, but I could not have told you that. So that's good information. I like that.
Yeah, that's one of those little cheats they give you as a judge when you're learning that, oh yeah, if you're looking for tannin quality, try take a sip and then, lick your teeth.
Oh yeah, and there it is. Okay,
It
weird,
just
but
kind of drags. It makes it feel different. And this is a little bit heavier body than the one we had last time too. It's a nice, not
it's heavier.
it feels a little thicker. It feels more like a red wine to me than a white wine. And even though this is,
It is. You can see it's an light amber. You can see right through it.
yeah, this is like a dark straw. It looks like a mead.
No, again, not complaining. It's a good
No.
mead. I mean, I would not mind it a little bit sweeter personally, but it's right up your alley.
Yeah. No, and this is not dry. This is a semi-sweet for sure, but it is a nice balance between the acidity, the tannin, and enough sweetness to present the fruit without being too cloyingly sweet. It has a good amount of body. I like this a lot. And I'm, to be frank, peach feels a little overdone. It's not one of my favorite flavors, but I like this presentation of
Okay,
peach.
excellent. Like I said, my peach is one of my favorite flavors. I usually go for it for nectarine because I don't like the fuzz, but
And nectarines, oh my God, when it's nectarine season and you walk past a stack of nectarines at the
oh
city
yeah.
market or
Oh,
like,
smell.
if I could put that in a bottle, I don't even care about the flavor. If I could put that smell of nectarine in a bottle of mead, I'd
So
be so
next
happy.
spring for at River Market, you want to see what we can do with that?
It's on the list.
No, let's
For
do it.
sure.
So, I will say, like I said last, my daughter is a trained chef, and she came to me one day and says, "Hey, Dad, try this and this and this and this." And I grabbed my phone and started making a list.
What you
So,
do, that's what you
because
do.
and I know from and you'll tell us from multiple people that do what we do. We have a list, and we want to get through our list, but the list never stops growing, and we're never going to finish it. We're going to try, but the list will grow faster than we can actually do.
Your list may as well be the boulder, and you may as well be Sisyphus, because every time you cross something off that list, you'll add two more.
Yeah, and the list will grow, and you don't have the time, energy, finances, or ability to keep up. It just isn't going to happen. But the idea is that's why we do what we're part of what we're doing here. Make your list because the chances are pretty good if we get enough people, our ideas will be on your list, and it may be higher up on your list, and you may get to it before we do and see what you can do. So, yeah, make your list.
There is nothing wrong with something that shows up on my list or your list showing up on somebody else's list. Somebody trying that, and then they report the obvious to us. I had a crazy idea a long time ago about making a historical mead. Since we're talking about categories next time, we'll talk more about it then. But there's a historical style that I wanted to riff off of, and I've never really gotten around to that. And somebody might take that idea and riff on it and tell me, Jeff, this was terrible. This was awful. And then you know what? I don't mind crossing it off my list if it was bad for somebody else, and it's going to be a waste of my time, or it might get a bump on my priority list to see if I need to do it better. This is the nature of this. This is a conversation not only between you and me, but with the mead
All of you.
making community at
All
home.
of
So
you.
yeah.
The mead making community and the people who want to try things. I've got a book on meads, historical meads from back to the 13th century.
Yes.
And holy cow, I mean, mead is one of the is arguably the oldest fermented drink in existence.
We have no way of proving it, but the hypothetical makes a lot of sense to me. And I mean, we have found evidence of ancient mead in parts of Africa, in parts of China, in the Fertile Crescent, Levant, Europe. It makes a level of sense that if it's not the oldest, it's been around
It's
pretty
pretty darn close.
close.
I mean, people will tell you, beer built the pyramids, but mead was there, was likely there too.
And I mean, yeah, there's a possibility that, like, those fruit trees that I think you were one of the first people that showed me the videos about the animals,
Arula, the arula berry.
right, where the fruit falls and the animals get drunk off the fruit that's fermenting. Primitive humans could have found that and got drunk off that fruit too.
Yeah,
They
absolutely.
absolutely could have.
If I can see a staggering elephant, I could see staggering humans. That's not even hard.
Yeah, that might be the most early fermented fruit drink thing consumed instead of mead. But yeah, it's pretty close. It's not that hard at the end of the day.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, let's move on to the actual topic of the day instead of just speculating about how
old this is.
Yeah. How prehistoric people used to get drunk.
All right. Well, equipment for making mead. Now, this is your basic equipment needs. You need, first of all, a container, preferably a glass jug, a gallon glass jug.
You could use a glass jug, or you could use a
food grade plastic.
Yes, food grade plastic. I can never remember the name of this plastic, but if you look at the recycling symbol at the bottom of a plastic container in the United States, food grade, it'll be that number 2. It's not ABS. It's something else.
It has to be food grade. Whatever you use food grade. This is a food, guys.
Yeah, food grade. Don't hurt yourself. Number 2 plastic with the recycling. If you're in another country where you have different recycling symbols, make sure it's food grade. Food grade is the one that is important. And make sure that it can be air sealed. There are plastic grommets on buckets you can use. The glass jars or jugs that we're talking about, you can get
a stopper or called a bung.
Right.
There's a hole drilled in it for the purpose of having an airlock.
Exactly.
Now, the second thing you use, the stopper or the bung.
Right.
It's a rubber stopper designed to fit in that spot. And I will do this a lot. Box and barley corn has various sizes. You got everything from these, like the apple cider jug you used to get in the stores. Mm-hmm. It has a stopper for that. They have wide mouth jars that are still a gallon. They have a twist on cap with a hole in the top for a airlock.
Right. Yep.
You need an airlock because otherwise you have a potential grenade.
You have a potential grenade. You also have potential vector for contamination of your mead.
Yeah.
Like it or not, even in our modern, very clean and very sanitized society, we have all kinds of little bugums that can
absolutely destroy your mead.
Yeah. Yeah. If you look at the sample mead for the, I need to replace that airlock for the fourth time because little fruit flies will go after the CO2.
Yeah. And they die to do it literally, right. But you don't want it in there.
The point of that airlock is that they have somewhere to drown instead of inside your mead.
Yeah. And so you need your stopper, you need your airlock. Now here's where we get a little bit sciencey.
Right.
You need a hydrometer. A hydrometer is used to test your specific gravity of the sugar content of your liquid, as I understand. Is that right?
Yes. Basically what we're doing, when you add sugar to a liquid to make your, what do we want to call this, a must, a wort? I believe we like to call it a must for mead, wort for beer. The sugar makes the liquid more dense. Hydrometer measures the density of your liquid, and it's been calibrated where at room temperature, or thereabouts, 68, 70 degrees.
Do your conversion for centigrade.
It will give you a numerical figure on the gravity scale or brick scale of how much sugar is in your fermenting.
Yeah. Now, mind you, liquid is usually water. But if you were doing a sizer, we'll go over different types of mead, like sizers and other things later. Mm-hmm. When I'm making an apple pie mead that I've made before, I'm using apple juice as my medium, not water.
Absolutely.
Your other liquid other than the sugar, which probably in this case is honey. There is actually an event in, I think, Finland, where there used to be a mead thing, but they frequently use brown sugar in their beverages now.
Okay.
Sugar. I mean, I won't call it meat anymore, but I will say it's still sugar and you can still do it. Your hydrometer is going to tell you how much sugar is in there and will give you an idea of how much alcohol content you'll have at the end.
Right. So here's the thing. You want to measure your gravity at the start, at the end, and you can see how far along you are in the process by taking a measure and seeing. What I will tell people time and time again, how to know if I am done fermenting. Take a gravity reading. Ooh. Wait 3 days. Take another gravity reading. If it hasn't changed, you're probably done.
Yeah. And saying there's no sugar left would be on your hydrometer would be 0.000, and there are three numbers after that point for a purpose. Do not think they don't have purpose. You won't necessarily get there.
Right.
You will not necessarily get to 1.000. But if it's not moving, the yeast is done. It's not going to do anymore.
It does depend on a lot of different factors. Different yeast strains have a different tolerance to the amount of alcohol they can produce and survive through. Different fruits or honeys will have different amounts of non-fermentable sugars in with the fermentable sugars like glucose, sucralose, and fructose.
And this is actually a conversation for another podcast. We'll go over those at another time. Point is, by using your hydrometer, you can find out where you are in your process. So it's absolutely necessary. I mean, if you don't want to know all this information, you're going to have the most random drink you've ever had. You don't know, but get one. It's important.
This all cycles back to take good notes. You need to know what you're doing. You need to know what you did so that you know where you got to and can go back there again.
Yeah, and do it again. And, yeah. You know, repetition is where an art becomes a science, and you can enjoy your science and art more.
I've talked to a number of people that are like, I don't need a hydrometer. I can just, you know, throw a few pounds of honey in a bottle and make some mead. And like, can you imagine the hell of creating the most delectable, wonderful mead you've ever made and not being able to repeat it?
But, with no recipe.
Right.
But no concept.
Being able to get maybe at best 80% close.
Yeah. And
it's just not as
even good. 90% close, you'd pull your hair out.
Yeah. It's just that little missing bit that would eat me alive and
forever.
Yeah, no, I would spend like half of my fermentations for the rest of my days trying to get that last little bit. And take notes, guys.
Take notes. Yeah, use your tools you have. Next thing you need is you need a racking cane or an auto siphon with tubing. This is so you can clean out your mead effectively,
right?
And bottle it ultimately.
You got to move it around. At the end of the day, you're going to get all kinds of gunk at the bottom of the primary fermentation vessel. You got to get it off that gunk.
What do you call the gunk that comes at the bottom?
There's a lot of different things you can call it. You can call it yeast detritus. You can call it trub. You can call it dead yeast.
Or I just call it must because I didn't know any better.
Must is actually the unfermented juice of fruit or honey.
Okay. So I've been wrong, and that's fine. But it's debris.
Right.
Can you drink it? Sure. It's not going to hurt you per se.
And honestly, that the dead yeast at the bottom can be high in vitamin B12, which is, from a organism standpoint, it's an expensive thing for our bodies to produce from us from the food we eat. So, yeah, it's
kind of... You can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with drinking.
But you're also eating like a very fine grain sand. So, drinking that.
It does not taste good.
No, it's not fun. But you need your auto siphon. And when you get your glass jug, get two. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to be racking from one jug to the other, and you're going to leave the debris and detritus behind from your first jug. You can throw that out, or you can put it in bread, or what, you know, figure out what you want to do with it. But I throw it out. But you know, this is where it's going to get starting clear and wonderful. Next thing you need is a wine thief. Now, a wine thief is a simple glass tube that you sanitize, stick in your mead, and you stop the top of it, and you pull some out. And you put in the glass to taste it.
It's a sampling.
It's a sampling thing. It's also what you use so you can check your gravity later.
Yeah. There are a number of different ways you can use these. There are a number of different wine thiefs. The one that he's talking about is the simple one that I like. It's a simple one-piece plastic tube. It's tapered on one end.
Glass tube.
Yes.
Oh, you said plastic. I don't know why.
Did I say plastic? I meant glass.
Okay. Well, may have said a glass in your head, but you said plastic out loud. But it's a glass tube.
The one I prefer is a simple glass tube. Yes. There are like three-piece plastic ones that I have tried and didn't like. Honestly, you can use a sanitized turkey baster, and it accomplishes mostly the same thing.
Yeah. You're simply grabbing a sample out of your mead. That's all you're doing. And you're putting it into the last point you need is a hydrometer test jar, and it's plastic. And it's simply a simple plastic tube that you put your mead into, and you drop your hydrometer in it to find out what your gravity is or your Brix rating is now.
Right.
That's all it is.
And honestly, we could tell you how to read a hydrometer on here verbally, but...
Look it up. It's easier.
Find a YouTube video. They will show you on the video how to read it. You read the meniscus line of the liquid on the hydrometer. I would rather tell you to go find a YouTube video so that they can show you a visual of it. It's a lot clearer to explain that way.
It would take us several minutes of telling you how to read it, and you get it in 2 minutes on a video. But these are your bare bones minimum things you need. For advanced meat making, there is always something more you can get.
There always will be.
And there always will be. You can get more advanced hydrometers. You can get more advanced everything.
I have a very cool stainless steel and silicon racking cane that I love to pieces. And silicon tubing instead of the nylon tubing. And things like that I have just acquired over the years because I can. And it's cool. And it's easier to clean.
And honestly, guys,
you don't need to.
Other than these basics, all I have that's different than the that what we told you is the I have the gallon glass jugs, don't get me wrong, but I also have 2 gallon jugs. I have 3 gallon jugs. I have 7 gallon jugs. I have 5 gallon jugs. That's the only thing I've really changed, and I'm making perfectly consumable meads that I'm truly enjoying, and my friends enjoy too. I mean, the basics, I've said this forever with everything I've ever taught, the basics always work. With your basics, you can do everything you need to do. If you want to get more advanced, by all means, help yourself. You can nickel and dime yourself as much as you want.
The last thing that people need to have for good mead making, one of the most important things we need to talk about, it's basically a separate topic here, is some kind of sanitizing liquid process.
It's sanitizing medium. This is, we're not talking bleach. Yes, bleach can sanitize. You don't want to put that in your drinking. What we use is star sand.
Star sand is my favorite.
Yeah, it works. What you need is a non-rinse food grade sanitizing liquid. And and number one thing you need to do, and everything that touches your mead from beginning to bottling till after you're bottled, everything that touches your mead is sanitized. You sanitize your hydrometer, you sanitize your bucket, you sanitize your plastic tube for your hydrometer, you sanitize everything, your spoon, your paddle or spoon that you mix with. Everything you do touch is sanitized before it touches that mead. You cannot over sanitize. It is number one thing for a reason, and I'm venomous about it, and I drowned my equipment in sanitizer. I will use a half a gallon of sanitizer per round.
Chris is at that stage of mead making where he's getting past the very early stages and into, broadening his horizons and things like that. And he has taken what I think is the best approach of being very militant about his sanitizing process, because you screw this up, you're out money, and all you're doing is cleaning out your sink.
Yeah, you're out money, you're out time, you're aggravated, you're pissed. I mean, sanitize, for goodness sakes, I've lost a batch of 7 gallon mead, and I almost shed tears. I'm very close to shed tears pointed down my sink. And as I'm pointing down my sink, my wife said, "It's okay." My wife's very comforting. "It's okay." She was mad too. But she, "It's okay." And I'm saying, "Oh, this is horrible. I don't want to do this anymore." You cannot. I will use so much sanitizer.
Star sand is not the only one to use. There are a number of other ones that I have used that I've liked. I still consistently like star sand because it is so easy to use. You can store a mixed version of it for, I think, 3 to 6 months generally
Yeah.
is safe. It's fine.
And you just stick it like, what was it, 6 milliliters?
What I have, so the package directions on the bottle star sand gives you how to make a 5 gallon
5 gallon batch.
batch. If you need that much, if you're brewing a lot, you
Cool.
do you. I boiled that down to 6 milliliters in a single gallon of distilled water.
Yeah.
I shake it up, I take a Sharpie, and I write star sand on that
And that I use
gallon.
that till it's gone.
It sits either under the right-hand side of my sink or down here in my basement where I'm brewing and goofing around, and I know where to find it. I know where it's at.
Same, same.
The advantage of using distilled water is when it starts to get cloudy, that's kind of your first
Catch
clue.
it.
It's time to move on.
Make another round.
The other way you can tell if it's still good is by judging pH, and that's kind
I
of.
don't know how to do that. If it looks cloudy, I pitch it. And I'll be honest, 6 milliliters for a gallon of water, and the smallest container I've ever seen of star sand is 4 ounces. That's a lot of gallons. I mean, they got cloudy before I finished, I'll be honest. So, sanitize. For goodness sake, sanitize. Like I'm a militant person about sanitation, and you should be too, because you're not doing this to pour it down a sink.
No, realistically, there are so many different options for sanitization. You can use star sand or another acid-based sanitizer. You can use iodopor or another iodine-based sanitizer. Both of those work great. Both of those, and it wouldn't be a terrible idea to switch from one to the other occasionally because some microorganisms will ignore one, but not ignore the other. For the longest time, Jackie over at Boxes and Barleycorn, who I learned so much from, was a big proponent of just using sodium metabisulfite, which is, it stinks like high hell, but that vapor itself was the part that was doing the sanitizing and not the contact with the liquid.
Really? I'm okay.
You put it in a sealed container, it's the vapor, and if you get the liquid splashed on it, yeah, that sanitizes too, but that is the one that kills.
Okay.
It has no staying power, it's gone because it will. The chemicals will decay. I don't, that might not be the right term, but
They
they
go
break
different.
down
Yeah.
within, 12 to 24 hours. And
And
so it's not something you can just stick under your
I
thing
have
and sit.
that. I haven't used it yet. I probably will now because I need to probably switch things up every once in a while.
It's not a terrible idea. I
But
mean,
number one, most important thing you're going to do in this process is sanitize. If it's good, if your water, your honey's not is bacteria resistant by itself, but once you dilute in water, it's not anymore.
no. And realistically, there are going to be things like pollen and yeast, wild yeast that are trapped in it, that if you don't have something that will outcompete them, as far as a commercial yeast, they're going to kick up.
And you're going to lose.
One of
Hedge every bet in your favor.
my favorite tips as a young mead maker, young brewer, that I got from sanitizing perspective, get yourself a platter or tray or some kind of large vessel. I know some people like to use like the little trays you get from, cafeterias in school. Or I, for the longest time, just used a big, like it was a thin ceramic plate that I got at Target or something and used to bring a cake to a party once and just didn't do that again. But I had a big thing in my kitchen and I could easily sanitize it. But the advantage of doing this is you have a sanitized surface. You can put your sanitized tools on it. As long as you don't unsanitize those tools by putting them somewhere they're not supposed to be, you can put those sanitized tools back on a sanitized surface, and everything is contained in your work area so that you don't have to keep messing with that sanitizer after you've got started.
Now, but mind you, I put myself on my things on a sanitized spot too, but I will still spray them before I start using them because I'm just that adamant about it. Moving on, I'm trying to get past my personal bias on sanitation and how venomous I am about that.
This will not be the last we hear of
You will hear it again and again. The next thing you need to do, the second most important thing, is you need to take notes.
Yes.
Very exact, specific notes. You need to, I mean, we didn't list it in our starting equipment, but I would recommend at least a little bit having a scale.
A scale is important. Yes, a like
You don't need it per se, but you should have.
a little infrared thermometer is not going to go amiss either.
Yeah.
Just something you can, the little laser pointer thing you can squeeze and it'll give you a temperature reading.
That can help.
Yeah,
Is it necessary? I've never used one, but you don't have to have it, but can it be useful? Yeah, absolutely.
the advantage of those, as opposed to anything else, is you don't have to sanitize it. You don't have to take a lot of effort to like get it into the fermenter and be very careful and hold on to it for 30 seconds or however long it takes for the alcohol or mercury or whatever to equalize to whatever. But you can get your brew temperature at least relatively close.
Yeah, and you get your information very quickly, and that's important. I don't often make a temperature reading from when I'm making my batches. Again, something I've got to start doing because if I'm going to start breaking this down, even my signature blackberry vanilla mead, I'm going to have to get the temperature right consistently because it matters.
To some extent, it matters more depending on the yeast you're using. If we're talking about a like a Kveik strain, which I love, I don't know if you've played with those very much, but
Not much.
they do very different things at different temperatures.
Again, yeast and all that is another episode, but take notes. Take notes because if you want to do this, if it's really, really good and you want to do it again, you're going to need your notes. If it's really, really bad, you want to know what to avoid.
Absolutely. And
And there's no reason not to take notes.
realistically, there are so many different ways to take notes. Some people like to do a defined like worksheet kind of thing where they list the type of yeast and how much yeast they added, how many pounds of honey, things like that. What I have found works best for me, honestly, is just to keep a notepad and do like a narrative of, so I did this. I put in added 12 pounds honey to a thing, red gravity, corrected gravity to 1080, blah 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 blah. And that got me to the details I needed, even if I was kind of unstructured, if you will. You have to find the way to works for you. And realistically, we live in a day where you could have like a note-taking app on your phone. You could literally say, hey Google, take notes, and just have it transcribe what you say while you're working.
Yeah, and whatever works for you. I personally am the I will sit down. I'll go through 3 pounds of honey per gallon. If it's gallon batch of 3 pounds of honey, this kind of this much of how much yeast, this much, I will okay for my medium of water or or whatever I'm using for the liquid medium. I won't tell you the specific amount because I'm taking the available space left from the amount of honey and everything else. And if I have the same, if I'm using 3 pounds of honey in the same count container and I'm filling it up to the same part of the bottle at the end, I'm probably pretty close. I'm not going to weigh out my medium per se. But, you know, that may become a thing after a while, and I may do that. The point is, everything I've made so far, I have a post-it note, a notebook. I have something to tell me how to make it again. So even if I don't get it exactly like the one time before, it's really close, and that's important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Repeatability is the name of the game because, yeah, no, if we make a brilliant batch that we want to have more of, but there's only 30 bottles.
Yeah, we better be hurried. We better be good.
You got to be able to repeat it.
And also, one thing I want to say is, you know, my note-taking, you know, I'll say how much honey, how much yeast, how much of other nutrients and chemicals, things I use. I know people who don't, I know a person specifically who uses tap water, basic Costco honey, and raisins. Mind you, his mead is good. It's not fantastic. It's good. But I will never use raisins, and I don't think Jeff will either.
Raisins are not nutrients. Fermadar is not a thing.
See, you know, and you know, but his mead is solid. I mean, people like his mead. I like his mead. I'll be honest. I've drunk his mead, and I still will.
I will state this. I tried his mead before he told me that he did not use nutrient. He only used raisins. And found, I was surprised at how good it was. Or a mead made without nutrients. I am not saying I recommend people make mead using raisins instead of nutrients. That's a risk I am not willing to take.
Yes, yeah, and but you know, also raisins are, you cannot control what's on, in, or whatever the raisins. If you're trying to make an exacting recipe, a random thing like raisins are not what you want.
You know why I would put raisins in mead?
Hmm.
To make a raisin flavored mead.
Okay, that's cool. And his defense, his mead does not taste like raisins.
No, it does not. It tastes like a traditional, and it's pretty good. There are other ways to skin that cat, and I think a better result. And why are you skinning cats? It's the year of our Lord 2024, almost 25.
Yeah, why are you doing it like it's 1492?
But anyway, let's get back to making mead.
Okay, yeah.
The right way.
Now, honey, I know a lot of you out there who have never made mead or never really thought about doing this. You're going to say, honey's honey. Oh my God, no. I'm sorry. Honey is not honey. There are so many types of honey. In the Valkyrie Horn competition, a man named Adam.
Yep, Adam.
Adam brought from his honey library little tiny 2 4-ounce containers.
Yeah, little 2-ounce jelly jars.
Of 96 types of honey. And he laid them out with little toothpicks in here. Try it. Just use one toothpick or thing and taste it and try all you want. I tried maybe 20 of them. After that, I was sitting here, I'm having trouble tasting the difference.
And once you've tried about 10, it's like, okay, I really like that one, but what was that one? And I got to remember it tomorrow. It can become an information overload, but that resource as a mead judge, being able to say, okay, you know, this mead was made with pineberry. And
yeah,
like, what does pineberry honey even taste like? Having that like little jar that I can go, oh, hey, he's got some pineberry here. What is that? Huh? That and then I can go back and reference that as I'm tasting it. Like,
you know,
I think we will see that popping up in bigger meat competitions all over the world.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. Now, I would not
be surprised. Meadow foam tastes like marshmallow.
Mm-hmm.
Fireweed tastes like a type of cinnamon.
Yeah, it's kind of spicy cinnamon baking spices. Yeah, it's great. I mean,
there are honey, and even the same hive will not necessarily produce the same tasting honey year after year after year because it's available pollens.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, I mean, it's going to be right. So this is why it will always be an art, not a science, because we will never have the same thing twice in a row. However, when you're starting, you need wildflower or clover honey.
Which is not to say that there aren't some exquisite kinds of clover that are very, you know, varietal specific all by themselves. But yeah.
In the same competition we went to in Valkyrie Horn, there were two types of orange blossom honey. One was from Florida, one was from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
You could profoundly taste the difference, not only in the honey, but in the mead they made.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For a starting mead set, you don't need to break the bank. There are, you can pay $20 a pound for Meadow Foam or Tupelo honey that will make amazing meads once you know what you're doing. But
when you're starting, don't. Costco.
Yeah.
Go to your store. Go to your farmer's market. Do whatever. But, you know, go cheap. I mean, your first one, your first 1 gallon batch, I personally recommend 5 pounds of honey, three for the fermenting process, two for back sweetening. Jeff would probably say less.
I don't think you need that much, but yeah, no, what I will say, go cheap, but don't go so cheap. We have heard for 10, 20 years now, there are people throwing caution out that, hey, not all the honey you could buy in the supermarket is real honey. It's a lot of high fructose corn syrup that's been adulterated.
Or if you go to restaurants, you'll get honey flavored syrup.
Right. You don't want to use that.
No.
That gives you weird flavors in the end when it's fermented. One of the reasons I like the Costco bulk honey, though, is that it is true source verified. And I've heard some people give crap to that program, but from everything I've seen, true source verified means that they have a source on the, what's the term in the art world, like the where it comes from. They contract with farmers.
They have a regional source. They have a verifiable line of, it came here from here, from here, from here.
Right. And that I will buy enough to say, okay, I'm probably not getting an adulterated honey. It may be mixed to all.
It may be mixed with three continents.
Right. Yeah.
I don't care. Not for your first batch or not for a basic batch. Mm-hmm. It works.
And if the honey flavor is not the major flavor that you're going for in the mead, it doesn't even need to like stop there at one of your first batches. I still use that for some cases where, like, you know, if we're going to make something that has strong fruit or spice flavors, I don't think I'm going to have a lot of honey detection in. I will totally use that as a base and maybe back sweeten with a varietal.
Yeah, and I've done that too. I mean, I've used basic Costco, Restaurant Depot, you know, store-bought honey. It's actual honey, yeah. But then when I back sweeten it, I will use a local farm or a flavored honey, specific flavored honey that from around me that I can get that will give me impart the flavor I want. You know, this is, like I said, and you're going to do this a lot. It's an art.
Yeah.
And I'm not Picasso, but I do share into the goal of.
Costco honey, the Restaurant Depot honey, they are training wheels. And if this is your first batch or your first six batches, I mean, what I want you to do here in making your first few batches is not necessarily make the greatest batch of mead that anyone has ever tasted. That's a bar too high, I think.
Yeah, and why is that your goal?
Right. I'm not even shooting for you have something so good your friends demand you make another bottle or make another batch for them. I want you to make something that is drinkable to you.
Yeah, the one that you enjoy to drink. When you walk by and say, hey, I'm going to have that tonight. And then you do. And that's where you should start. If you want to go to competitions, win the Miser Cup or...
Maser Cup.
Not Maser. Me. Thank you. I'm so far away from that, I can't even say the name right. But the Maser Cup or the war, you know, the honey maker of the year, the mead maker of the year, or whatever goal you want, do it. But start out, baby steps, man, baby steps. Start with just making a good batch. Now, tell me about raw honey, Jeff. Why raw?
So, if you think about honey, we have talked about all the different varietals and how, you know, meadow foam tastes like cotton candy, and Tupelo tastes super sweet, and fireweed has like spicy flavors to it, and there's all these great flavors to it. If you compare the amount of like flavor molecules or flavor varieties found in mead or like honey to what you get in the grape must of a standard wine, honey tends to have around 100 different possible flavor combination, like little molecules floating around that, and that seems like a lot, right?
Yeah.
Wine, on the other hand, has like 500 to 600. And when you compare the two like that, you realize that honey as a base thing, as a mead as a base thing, is kind of at a little bit of a disadvantage because there is less distinction there. The advantage of using good natural, I don't know if you want to call it raw, if raw is the best term for it, but
pasteurized, not cooked.
Right. We don't want to cook it. We don't want to process it. And there is space for cooked, but let's not go down that
not today.
Rabbit hole. Yeah. You want to have the pollen character. You want to have the individual little bits of... You want as many of those 100 little flavor molecules as you can get, because there's just not that many of them comparatively. If you compare a mead to a wine to a beer, the more preserved fullness of that honey experience you get, the minimal processing of like, hey, let's not remove the pollen, let's not get it high temp, high pressure kind of mixing, the closer you can get to the natural thing, the better in the end you're going to have an experience of drinking it that is closer to, you know, what the bees were gathering themselves.
Yeah. And mind you, okay, this is another reason I asked Jeff. I knew some of that, but he said that so more profoundly and in depth than I could have. And that's why, again, this is why I'm here, to get these information out. Raw honey isn't heated or pressurized or filtered or, and
Well, it can be minimally those, but like when we talk about the adulteration of honey, especially like parts of China, Russia, and I know a number of like farms in Ukraine at one point were kind of involved in this as well. I can't verify any of this myself, but what I am understanding that they do is they filter it to such an extent that the bulk of the pollen existent in those honey batches is gone. You can't use that because that is a the pollen from each plant is the way to identify what kind of honey it is. But once that's gone, then you can cut it with high fructose corn syrup, and it's to
it's a
pass.
honey syrup.
Yeah, it stops being honey much at all. But that's also high filtration for that honey.
And let's be honest, to make a very horrible analogy that just came into my head, take your favorite cookie and filter out the part you like. If you like chocolate chip cookies, take out the chocolate chips and you have the same cookie, but it kind of tastes chocolate a little bit because the flavor kind of went in. Why are you eating the cookie now? And it's kind of like that. I mean, it's a horrible analogy, but use the honey the way it's meant to for meat. I mean, get filtered, sure, but filter for the parts that you don't, the particulates, not filter for the pollen.
Generally speaking, we're talking about mead, which is an alcoholic beverage made from fermented honey. The definition of that is fermented from honey, and so the experience of that honey should play into that beverage. If you just want an alcoholic
Drink.
beverage that's sweet, it's called a sugar wash. It's
Yeah.
easy to make.
And have fun. But, I'm looking for something that I want to drink.
The expression of that honey that the bees spent their entire lifetime gathering for you to make this beverage, that's kind of important. And it
Yeah.
can be a major part, it can be a minor part. I'm not going to judge. Well, I might be judging, actually.
No, I'm kind of judging, I'll be honest. But I'll be honest, even when I'm making whatever meat I'm making, and I have my little jugs of 5 gallons each of my honey, I'm kind of tight about getting all the honey I can out of that jug, simply because the bee made in its lifetime a teaspoon of that,
If
if that. And I in a in, you know, this call this philosophy, call this hippie herpy derpy, whatever you want to call this, but I'm trying to honor the fact they spent their lifetime making that little bit of honey that I'm putting into my mead, so I'm gonna use all that I can.
And as a someone that used to keep bees and hopes to at some point again,
Be awesome.
keeping those girls alive is such an effort.
Yeah. And I mean, there are people out there, I mean, I can't tell you, a few people say, oh, you make mead, so you raise bees. I'm saying, you make that sound like that makes it cheaper. I mean, how much honey did you get out of the bees you raised, Jeff?
Maybe 20 pounds.
In how many years?
Three.
Three? Oh, wow, that's no.
That's after about probably I would estimate a $1,500 to $2,000 investment.
Yeah, I mean, raising bees does not mean you're going to have cheap
No,
honey.
no, no. Raising bees is a great way to lose money, actually. It's a great way to not have honey because, like, a lot of the honey that I could have harvested, I gave back to them to hopefully survive the winter. But
Yes,
they did.
but I will hand it over to the professionals that are actually good at this, that can give me the honey.
Like it or not, beekeepers are they have a they have a lot these days, and survival rates are not great. It is a numbers game for sure. And if I had the space and the money and the wherewithal to have a couple hundred hives, I could maybe have some homegrown honey.
Yeah, I would cheer for, if I had the oodles and boodles of cash available to throw at him for this, I would do it, comma. This doesn't mean I'm getting cheap money. This means I'm tripling my work and maybe not getting anything out
If you are interested in bees and their life cycle and the way they work and do their thing, beekeeping is a wonderful hobby that I enjoy for profoundly. It is not a vehicle to get your own money.
it. No. Go to the beekeepers that have the honey available for you. Go to the farmers markets. Go to.
Support your local beekeeper because those guys need the support.
Oh God, yes, please do. All right, let's go. No, we talked at the beginning of this episode about your first recipe. This is not hard. Now, one of the things we did not mention in our starting equipment is your nutrients and chemicals of choice. You're
Right.
going to need a few things here. And again, when you get your kit from Box and Bronco, they'll be there. Everything is going to be in this kit. Your first round, all you'll need to add is honey and water.
Right. The reason I like this is this is a relatively low ABV mead. That gives you a few advantages. We're talking
ABV, I'm sorry, guys. ABV is
alcohol
alcohol by
by volume.
volume. This is your 3.2 beer, your 12% wine. This is how much alcohol is in your drink. We're spitting out numbers here that even I know them, but I want to make sure that you're clear.
The recipe I'm throwing your guys' way is 8%, which is a lot for beer and it's not a lot for wine.
Yeah, it's smack in the middle almost.
The advantage of this is that A, this is a very clean ferment. This is also a relatively fast ferment. You can, depending on your yeast preference, I'm going to throw this one out there with 71B because it is a workhorse that does its thing and will
Is good.
consistently perform. That is a great first ferment. This is something that you can get out of primary probably in 2 to 3 weeks. You can have it in a bottle inside of 6 weeks easy. And you can get on to your next batch, and you can have something that you can be relatively proud of. The other advantage of this recipe is this is a great building block because you can take this base recipe, you can add fruit to it, you can add spices to it, you can add juice to it, you can back sweeten it with a different varietal of honey. There is so much you can do with just this very basic thing,
It's very flexible.
right? So check the show notes. It's my recipes are not, hey, use X number of pounds of honey because some honeys have more sugar content than others. I will say usually when I'm making an 8%er, I start with about 2 pounds of honey and then I dial up to the target gravity, which in this case is going to be I believe it's 1080 or 1085. I need to go back into my notes. The notes will be in the show notes. So go check the doodly-doo. Also included in the show notes are going to be the yeast nutrient recommendations. I personally like Vermaid K.
That's what I use.
Vermaid K is half as much and twice as nitrogenous as Vermaid O.
Explain that.
So the major part that you're getting from your yeast nutrient is available nitrogen in the form of it's basically the nutrients that the yeast need to,
Eat sugar.
yeah, it's their metabolic process.
Okay.
So
Don't be too science here. Keep it simple.
Vermaid K has twice as much like nitrogen biomass as Vermaid O, the other really popular nutrient.
Mind you, both of these are good. They'll do the job.
Right.
I prefer the K like Jeff.
Right. I don't see enough difference to justify using twice as much O at twice the price to switch to O. Some people do. Some people love O. I just don't see it. By the same token, you can also use DAP, and DAP is even more concentrated. I just feel like it's like giving a kid a candy bar. You know, it goes hot and it can boost your temperature. It can promote off flavors. I like a nice, easy ferment on K. Now, on
We'll go over this more
a.
later on. So this is your first recipe. Stick with what we're giving you for right now
Right.
and branch out to what you want to find for you. Make it individualized after you start.
Now, you may also see some people talk about like splitting your nutrient additions and things like that. Another reason we're starting with an 8% is you don't need to do that. This will go through the ferment pretty easily. You don't need to worry about overfeeding and things like that. If you go up to a 12 to 15% ABV mead, then yeah, you want to start step feeding.
Yeah, and I've gone up as high as 18 in mine. That was a headache. I mean, I was doing a lot of step feeding there because it was a hassle.
An 8% is a nice, easy ferment. You'll get a great first product that you can enjoy, you can share with friends, and you can use this as a building block to get further success. That's what I want for you. I want you to have something nice and approachable. It may be great, and you may be very proud of it to share with all your friends. You may think, well, it's okay, and I don't want to give this to my friends, but I can at least drink this on a Tuesday when I've had a hard day at work.
And that's fine.
There's nothing wrong with
This
that.
is where you, this is your first step into making a mead you can be proud of. You can be proud of this one, but you can go branch out into what you want. I've said, my favorite one is the blackberry vanilla. I've made apple pie. I've made pomegranate. I've made lemon ginger. I've made a lot.
As we progress with this, we'll talk about more of the details related to these recipes. This published recipe is going to be, like I said, on the show notes. We'll probably also have a spot on the website for it too.
Yeah, sure.
We'll talk about we'll probably reference back to this at some point and say, okay, so we did, this is a riff on this one. We changed this value for this reason and this value for that reason, so that you can understand my thought process in developing these recipes and make it a little bit more approachable in you developing your recipes too.
And I would like to call this the Mead House Starter Mead.
Yeah.
And when we reference the Mead House Starter Mead, you can reference back to our website and pull it right up.
Let's call this the Starter 8%.
Starter 8%.
Because I think in another 5 or 6 episodes down the line, I'd like to do a Starter 12%.
Yeah.
To talk about some of those differences, like step feeding and things like that, because I think 12% is a little bit more in that wine strength sphere that a lot of people are expecting.
But let's go back to our first batch, first recipe, the Mead House 8%.
Yes, this is a very easy thing. Make it traditional. It doesn't even need to be a, you don't need to use any kind of special variety. You don't, for this one, need to put any kind of spice fruit into it. Just make it traditional. If it ferments clean and it doesn't taste, 3 months down the line, like overly yeasty or like nail polish or have any bad flavors to it, you have made a good first mead.
Yeah, and it's awesome. Believe me,
Yeah.
tasting your first good mead that you made is empowering. It's wonderful.
The bar doesn't need to be high here. It needs to just be a good first step for you to get on this path, and that's what we want for you is
Exactly.
let's give you a good W and get you going.
Yeah.
Like I said, I would start with about 2 pounds of honey, and I would dial up to your starting gravity. Now, when we get to finishing this out, that's when you'll decide whether it's going to be dry or sweet.
That's fair.
Because one of the things we need to do at the end is to stabilize. This will be in the recipe directions. Once you've reached the 1.00 or below, and the gravity has stayed stable between two readings, like we were talking about in our last episode, you're done. The
Your meat is
yeast
done.
has eaten all the sugar and it has gone into remission.
Okay,
That's
anyway, start. 2 pounds of meat, 2 pounds of honey.
2 pounds of honey for start, and then dial it up from there.
Yeah.
Get your starting gravity.
We're going for 1.065 for your gravity reading with your hydrometer.
Right.
Make sure you have your honey water mixture to 1.065. This is for 8% alcohol.
You add your yeast in this case. We're with 10 with the 71B. I don't think we even need to go to the Gopherm route with this. We
Okay.
can basically rehydrate it in a quarter cup of good spring water.
Yeah. And now the water you're using, now depending on where you are. Now in America, water tends to be very hard out of the tap. We don't use that. Jeff and I don't use it. We'll use bottled spring water, or
Yes.
at worst case, bottled a reverse osmosis water.
I wouldn't use bottled reverse osmosis water. I like spring water because of the mineral content.
Yeah.
The hardness is not the problem. The hardness is actually beneficial because that acts as a buffer for some of the acidity that the yeast will create by unbinding it from sugars in the process of
Yeah, but it's
making
the
that meat.
fluoride and the.
It is the chlorine, chloride, the chemicals in our tap water that are there to protect us.
No fault. This is not what you want in your mead.
Right. Those have a negative interaction with the metabolic processes of the yeast and can throw some weird, nasty off flavors in there.
But we like
So,
spring water here.
yeah, spring water has the mineral content that I'm looking for. Generally, you can buy what I'm using in my brews 90% of the time is the generic brand
Bottles of spring
spring.
water
Yeah,
by the gallon,
right.
and that works just fine. And you're only making a gallon, so get one. You're paying about $1.50.
Yeah, at $1.60, I think, was what I paid the last time I was at the store.
Yeah, I've
It's
got as low as
nothing.
135 to 160, so high 175. But that you're paying how $5 per a pound of honey. Think about it. It's not that big of an investment at this
Yeah,
point.
the water is least of your problems. So add quarter cup of that spring water to the yeast and let it proof while you're mixing up your honey.
Yeah.
Proof is literally just proof that it's alive. You want to see the foam. You want to see the bubbles. You want to say, oh yeah, yeast is doing its
He used
thing.
to do his thing. Now, one thing we did not mention at this point is, when you put your honey and your water in the jug, make sure you mix it. Get
Yeah.
something in there that you can mix it up with.
Your OD.
Sanitize your mixer,
Yeah.
but mix that. You have to have your honey and your water thoroughly mixed, or you don't want clumps of honey in there that the yeast can't get to.
The advantage of having a 1 gallon jug initially, you don't even necessarily need a stir. You can put on like a glove or sanitize your hand, whatever your level of comfort with cleanliness is, and just shake the bejesus out of it. But if you have like honey stuck to the bottom of your mixer, that's not mixed into the water, your gravity reading is going to be off.
Yeah. And plus the honey can't necessarily get to all that sugar that's clumped together. It's going to get to the outside of it, and eventually kind of maybe it will get to the middle.
It's going to take some effort for that to dilute and get to where, yeah, it's usable.
Mix it. Make sure it's nice and mixed. I mean, it doesn't take long. It's not a huge amount of effort to do it. So now we're going to bloom the honey, the yeast, rather. I'm going to bloom the yeast.
Yeah, proof the yeast.
The yeast. And once you smell the yeast, it smells like bread. Guys, it's easy to know if it's working.
Saccharomyces cerevisiae is the same bread yeast you find in the supermarket. That's the same thing you use to make ale and wine. You know the smell.
Yeah, and don't use bread yeast. Use the yeast we're telling you, please. For your first batch, use this yeast.
You can use bread yeast, but why? So
71B is what you want to use.
This is another... Look at yeast like another, look at it like a domesticated animal.
Okay.
We have bred it for a specific purpose. The bread yeast you find in stores, with the process of metabolizing sugar into food, yeast cells, I'm going to get a little graphic here, fart out carbon dioxide and pee out alcohol. And the bread yeast that you find in stores has been bred specifically.
For bread.
Yeah, it is made to be really good at that farting carbon dioxide part and ish about the peeing out alcohol. The wine yeast that we are suggesting here, 71B,
is for making your alcohol. Mm-hmm.
It makes the alcohol without a lot of off flavors, and the off flavors that it can make, the extra flavors that it can make, those little esters and things like that are complementary to the flavor you're looking for and not contradictory to it or not fighting with it.
In a nutshell, do as we say for now. Mm-hmm. Take our word for it. We're not trying to make it hard for you. We're trying to make this very easy for you. Just use what we're telling you to use to get what you want to get.
Realistically, it can be inconvenient to get 71B, but it's not expensive. It's a pack of it is what, $1.50?
$1.50, $2, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's not bad.
You have to go to a homebrew store. You have to order it from a homebrew store somewhere.
And honestly, you're going to get 5 grams?
Right.
For a gallon, you're going to ferment fast.
Realistically, you can put an entire 5-gram package in there. You probably need 2 grams.
Yeah, you need less than half.
You could make 2 batches with 1 envelope. You could. It's up to you.
It's up to you, but remember, follow the instructions like any recipe to get what you want. Mm-hmm. So once you bloom the yeast, pour it into your container, your jug, cap it.
Weigh and mix your nutrient. Add that as well.
Yeah. No, you want to get yeast nutrient in this, or you just want to use the yeast?
Use the yeast. Use the yeast nutrient.
Okay.
Nutrient's got to eat.
Yeah. Use your fermented keg and mix it. You can mix it with the yeast. Mm-hmm. You can bloom it with the yeast. And once you've added that to it, stir it into your honey water mixture, put your stopper, your bung on top with your airlock in place, and make sure your airlock has a little bit of sanitized water in it, or just even water.
Right.
Sanitized water is what I use. And within a day or so, you're going to see bubbles.
Yeah. You should expect to see bubbles 12 hours to 48 hours later. If you get to 72 and you don't see bubbles, and you had good proof yeast in the first place, something's going wrong.
Something's gone wrong.
And the first thing you need to check for going wrong is make sure you've got a good air seal on your bung.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10.
You need to push your bung down a little bit tighter.
Yeah. The bung or the grout that is holding your airlock in place is loose. And you're getting air taking path of least resistance, and it's not through the airlock.
You want it through the airlock.
Right.
And I'll be honest, it's kind of fun to see it bubbling through the airlock because it's doing what you want it to do. And then once you do that, now it's a waiting game, guys. Mm-hmm. Now it's patience. Wait till it stops doing that.
Right. And then follow the recipe. Again, there are so many different ways to do this at the end, but the recipe that I'm giving you here is using sodium metabisulfite and sodium... not sodium metabisulfite. That's a sanitizer.
That's a
sanitizer.
No.
Potassium
metabisulfite
and potassium sorbate.
Yes.
To sanitize, not sanitize.
To kill your yeast.
Exactly. Stabilize was the word I was looking
for. Okay. Stop being too elaborate here. Well, once it stops bubbling and you've got your good gravity reading you want from your hydrometer, all you're doing now is you want the yeast to, if you were to add sugar again, in the form of honey, white sugar, brown sugar, whatever, molasses, any type of sugar, to this bottle, the yeast is going to wake up and say, oh, more sugar, and start eating, and you're going to add more alcohol.
Right.
And what you want to do is once it stops, there's no more sugar for the same thing to eat. It's done. You want to kill your yeast. So you're going to use your sodium metabisulfite.
Potassium metabisulfite.
I'm sorry. Potassium metabisulfite. I made the same mistake. And your potassium
sorbate.
Sorbate. And it's a 1-2 punch, as Jeff described once upon a time, to make sure all the yeast is dead. You pour these in. They dissolve quickly. You mix it up. You let it sit for a day. And once that happens, the yeast is dead. Once you kill the yeast, now you're going to rack it. Mm-hmm. You're going to take your autosiphon and you're going to hold the bottom of it a little bit away from the bottom of your jug, and you're racking to the other jug, your second jug we told you about earlier, without all the yeast detritus at the bottom of your bucket.
Detritus, yes.
All the particulates. And from there, you have mead.
Mm-hmm. This is where you decide whether you want a dry mead, leave it alone, or a sweet mead. You add some
extra honey.
Extra honey. At this point, you can do a cheat and add fruit juice and make a fruity mead.
Yeah.
Really, it's not the best way to do it. It's a fine way to do it.
But for now, just
this is for you.
Find out if you want it sweeter or you want it drier. Mm-hmm. If you want it dry, leave it alone. If you want it sweet, add some honey. And, you know, add some honey, mix it up, take your thief, take it out, taste it.
The advantage of doing the sweetening at this step, as far as especially using varietals, is how little honey you actually need to get what you're looking for.
It doesn't take much.
My back sweetening amount is generally between 2 to 6 ounces per gallon.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
It takes very little to make it a sweet burger mead, and you just, and you will know immediately. Mm-hmm. Once you've mixed it together and you take a little bit out for your thief and you put it in a glass and you taste it, that's what you're going to get.
Dial it in, guys. You can't add, you can add more, you can't take it out.
Yeah. So, if you want, I think I may want a little bit more, but I'm not sure. Stop. Because if it's palatable at that point, mm-hmm. it's palatable. Next time, make it a little more, make it a little less. But, even when you're adding more back sweet honey, measure it.
You can get very sciencey, and I've seen people split their batch into like little 50 milliliter Erlenmeyer flasks. And they'll,
I've seen several do that.
Right. They'll take go by increments of 5 specific gravity points and add more or less honey and kind of go, I like this, I like it. This is your first
meet. No, don't do that.
You don't need to go that far. Just dial it in based on your perception of what you think is good.
And what you like. Mm-hmm. Remember, you're making this for you.
Yeah.
So, sweeten it to the point you like it, stop. Fork it, done.
Your first meet is a success. Congratulations.
You don't have to filter anymore. You don't have to strain it anymore. All you have to do is enjoy it.
Right. This episode is running so long. We have been talking on this for quite a while. So I think we should say cheers. Here's to good mead. And we will see you guys next time. Mr. Martindale, have a good one.
Mr. Shouse, thank you for coming to the Mead House. We'll see you next time.